Okay, so I guess we can start. And tonight I'm going to talk about the exciting topic of delusion. So are you excited about delusion? Is that interesting? It is one of these very fundamental things in the Buddha's teaching, the idea of delusion. Delusion means not seeing things according to reality. It means like being in the dark, not knowing where you're going, kind of fumbling around trying to find your way. These are all kind of ideas of delusion. And it's one of the fundamental ideas of Buddhism is to move from a state of delusion or not seeing things in the right way to the idea of awakening. Awakening is precisely the idea of emerging from delusion, of seeing things according to reality. So this is really absolutely fundamental to the Buddhist ideas. So for this reason, delusion may not sound very promising, but actually it is a very basic idea, a part of the Buddhist path. And for example, if you, those of you who know your Buddhist teachings a little bit, you will know about the 12 steps of dependent origination, Paticca-samuppada. Of course, that starts off with delusion at the very beginning. Avijja, often translated as ignorance. I think delusion is a far preferable translation of that. And from that avijja, from that delusion, he goes through 12 steps and it ends up with suffering on the other end. So ultimately, delusion is a cause of suffering in our lives. So by removing delusion, by reaching awakening, if you like, by turning on the lights, seeing where you are, you end suffering and you attain the highest happiness, according to the Buddhist teachings. So very important. When you look at the way meditation is described in the suttas by the Buddha, it talks about, this is actually very exciting, this is really exciting. This is because the way the Buddha talks about meditation practice is all about happiness. And you may have, even if you meditate just a little bit, like you did just now, even if you just feel a bit more relaxed afterwards, what is that relaxation? It is a degree of happiness, isn't it? And that degree of happiness already, but just by reducing suffering, that is also a kind of happiness. And the whole Buddhist path is about increasing happiness, until you get to the point your mind is so pure that you're actually able to avoid and break through delusion and see things according to reality. This is the whole purpose, ultimately, of our meditation practice. So a very important aspect of the Buddhist path. So what does it actually mean? What are we deluded about? And there's many different angles in which to understand the idea of delusion. One of the interesting ways is to understand it, of course, avijja, the opposite of avijja is vijja. So the opposite of delusion, vijja, is insight in Buddhism. May not be obvious, but actually really it means insight. So what is this insight? And there's three insights in Buddhism that are absolutely kind of crucial to understanding the nature of reality. And that is the insight into past lives, the idea of rebirth, the understanding of karma, which is like the structure or how rebirth actually comes about. And then lastly is the insight into awakening itself. So these are kind of three things that are often that I would translate as true insight on the Buddhist path. Very often when we talk about insight, we're talking about sitting down in meditation, becoming peaceful, watching things arising and passing and all these kind of things. And this is one way of looking at insight. But if you actually look at the way the Buddha taught these things, far more powerful are these fundamental insights into the nature of the world, the nature of reality, starting with rebirth, understanding the laws of karma, and then the awakening experience itself. And to understand how important these things are, it's very nice to look at some of the similes that the Buddha uses to actually explain these things. Very beautiful and powerful similes. This is reason enough to read the word of the Buddha, is actually to see some of the similes that he talks about, because they're so often so powerful and so kind of direct. You think, whoa, now I understand what is going on. This is really speaks to me in a very powerful way. One of those similes, the Buddha says, is that it's like turning on the light. Before you have insight, it's like you are in darkness. What happens if you are in darkness? You're walking around, trying to kind of feel your way around the room or the forest or wherever it is that you are. And my darkness is often the forest because I live down in Serpentine, which is a really nice kind of darkness, by the way. I can really recommend the darkness of the forest. That itself is good enough reason to become a monk or a nun, yeah? Just to be in the cutie by yourself, in the darkness, see the stars at night, feeling so beautiful at night. You have no idea what you're missing out on by living in the city. So that itself, good enough reason to become a monk and nun. So afterwards, if that inspires you, Venerable Sunil here will help you to shave off your hair. You've got the razor with you, Venerable Sunil, yeah? And we will sort that out afterwards. But seriously, actually, it is very nice and very inspiring here. But the problem is that if it is too dark, if the moon is now, the stars aren't, and you can't see anything here, even though you try to feel your head, feel your way around, sometimes you bump your head against something, yeah? And you kind of end up suffering a lot because you are in darkness. You don't know which way you're going. You don't know which way to head. You don't know where the path is. You don't know how to get to the toilet block, yeah? Whatever it is. That is a lot of suffering here. Then, one day, somebody turns on the light. Yeah, you find the light switch on the turn light. Now you can see everything. No more suffering, no more problems. An awakening experience is exactly like that. It's like the turning on the light. Now you understand the nature of reality. This is what rebirth is about. Seeing rebirth, like turning on the light. Wow! This is what it's like. I had no idea. Or maybe I believed in rebirth. I had some confidence in it. But I didn't actually know what it really felt like. This is what it feels like. Wow. It's astonishing. Yeah. So this is one of the similes that Buddha used. The other simile I had to use, which is very, to my mind, very, very powerful and always caught my eye when I was reading the discourses of the Buddha, is where it says it's like a chick. A chick inside the eggshell. Yeah, you see yourself as a chick inside the eggshell. It's a very small world, right? The eggshell is very tiny. All you can see is the wall right there in front of you. Maybe there's a bit of light coming through the eggshell sometimes. You can maybe see a shadow or something. But it's a very, very tiny world. And the Buddha says before awakening, we are like chicks in an eggshell. You haven't got a clue what's going on. Basically, have no idea. Then one day, you kind of take your little, you've got to have long fingernails for this, yeah? But it's like the little chick takes this little kind of point of his claws, yeah? And little beak that he has, or she has maybe, if it's a female chick, yeah? And then you break out of that eggshell, and you see, wow! Imagine the difference from being inside an eggshell to actually breaking out of the egg and then seeing the world around you. That is the difference, says the Buddha, between being deluded and actually seeing things according to reality. Certainly see the vastness of things, the reality of things. You get an entirely different view of what is going on. So these are real insights. Yeah? When the light gets turned on, these things such as seeing your past lives, understanding the laws of karma, the driving mechanism behind the idea of rebirth, and then the awakening experience itself. This is a kind of fundamental Buddhist insight. This is one way of looking at the idea of delusion or lack of delusion. Yeah, the two things obviously coming together, insights versus delusion. There is another way, which is very common in the suttas. Suttas, by the way, means the word of the Buddha, yeah, the discourses of the Buddha. I should be very careful with how I'm so used to using Pali. Pali is the ancient, I even had to explain that, I should explain that as well. Pali is the ancient language that was used, has been used for 2,500 years pretty much, very similar to the language by the Buddha. The scriptures we have today are written in the Pali language. As a monk in the monastery, we kind of use Pali terms all the time. Yeah, so we kind of, after a while, you don't think about it twice. But yeah, I should really be careful about that. So anyway, Four Noble Truths. Another fundamental way of thinking about either delusion or non-delusion. If you understand the Four Noble Truths, it means that, I mean, really, through insight, you are not deluded. Don't know what's going on with the Four Noble Truths? That is the very, almost, the most important definition of delusion in the suttas. Now, the first Noble Truth, okay, just, again, Four Noble Truths, yeah, the Noble Truth of suffering, for those of you who are new, Noble Truth of the origin of suffering, this is very interesting, isn't it? Suffering, if you can really understand what suffering is about, it means also you have a way of getting out of suffering. If there's anyone here who hasn't got any problems in their life, then this talk is not for you. But if you have even the slightest problem, this is the way out, even the slightest problem. The end of suffering is possible. So the suffering, the origin of suffering, understand why suffering actually arises. Third Noble Truth, the end of suffering. there is such a thing as the ending of suffering. The highest happiness, yeah. This kind of speaks to us as human beings on a very deep level. It's possible to reach something called the highest happiness in the world, where all suffering is eliminated. Maybe hard to believe, but according to the Buddha's teachings, it is possible. Fourth noble truth, the path that leads to the end of suffering. Once you understand what these noble truths are about, it's like, wow, this is really important. It's so significant. Actually, it is what life really is all about. But the first noble truth is the noble truth of suffering here. Now that noble truth can in turn be understood in a more kind of comprehensive way here. And that more deeper way is to understand that when we talk about suffering or unsatisfactoriness or dukkha, dukkha is the Pali word which means these things. When we talk about that, we're also talking about anicca, which is impermanence or unreliability, and we're also talking about non-self at the same time. These things revolve around each other. The reason why the world is problematic is because it is impermanent. Yeah, you can't hold on to things. Things always change. You lose what is yours. You lose kind of your aspects of your personality, perhaps. You get depressed. Oh, I was happy before. Now I feel, you feel terrible about that. You lose things that you consider deeply yours in a certain way. So impermanence, unreliability, very closely related to the idea of suffering. Non-self, also very closely related to that, because the idea of a self is the idea that we can control the world. But actually, the truth is, things are, generally speaking, out of control. We can only do so much to shape our future. But what we certainly in the external world, but the good news is we can do a lot to shape our inner world. And that is where the real spiritual work, of course, lies inside of us rather than outside. So these are called the three characteristics of existence in Buddhism. Yeah, things are impermanent. Things are suffering in one way or another, or unsatisfactory. Things are non-self. Three characteristics of existence. Very fundamental to understanding the Buddhist teachings. And as long as we don't understand these things properly, as long as we don't understand suffering fully, as long as we don't understand impermanence fully, as long as we don't understand non-self fully, as long as that is the case, we are basically deluded. Very important part of the idea of avidya, of delusion. I'm mentioning these three things in particular because I want to base some of the things I'm going to say in a second on these things. So that is delusion. Yeah, this is the darkness in our lives, like from the Buddhist point of view. So what next? What is the causes of delusion? How does delusion actually come about? Yeah, and because once you understand the causes of delusion, you also understand the ending of delusion. If the causes are removed, then of course delusion itself will end. Yeah, so this is a very important part of it. If you want to understand how to overcome this problem of darkness, if you're one of those people who is keen on breaking out of the chick's shell, are you keen on that? Would you like to break out of the shell? It's pretty cool. Yeah, suddenly you see the world. Wow. It's pretty cool. Imagine being a chick and suddenly seeing the reality outside. Now that would be something astonishing. So if you are keen on that, I really recommend being keen on that. So please be keen on that. If you are, you want to find the causes of delusion. What are the causes of delusion? And the Buddha says in the suttas that actually, this is the bad news, there is no real first cause of delusion. Delusion is a self-perpetuating force that keeps you going onwards and onwards and onwards, always kind of bringing itself along. You can't really break out of delusion very easily because it perpetuates itself. And so it is in the past. If you go back into the past, let's say that you're able to remember your past lives, there is no first point of delusion. There is no ultimate cause why delusion came into existence in the first place. And that's kind of scary, isn't it? If you accept that from the Buddha, and you think that the Buddha might be right about that, it's kind of scary. There is no kind of ultimate cause of these things. It means that you will keep on being deluded into the future. Except for one thing, and that is you can find the circuit breaker that can turn this thing off and make you see things in a different way. What is that circuit breaker? That circuit breaker is the teaching of the Buddha. This is why the Buddha calls himself the eye of the world, the one who sees first. And when somebody has seen, he sees for the rest of the world, he can pass on that insight onto the rest of humanity and allow us to make that breakthrough, find an end of that delusion which has always been there. So this is why the teaching of the Buddha are so important. This is why the suttas say that, what the Buddha says, that the paratogosa, I like to use a few Pali terms because it kind of sounds impressive. When I say paratogosa, you think, wow, what is this? Paratogosa means the voice of another. So the voice of another is so important, because without that, we are trapped into this self-perpetuating cycle. Once one person has been able to break through, it enables the rest of us also, gives the rest of us also that chance to break through. So this is why it is so important. But before I go on about that, I just want to say just very briefly about this idea that delusion is self-perpetuating. The Buddha says, if you go into the past, there is no first point of delusion. And this is very similar to saying that there is no first point of existence, because existence and delusion must always go together. As long as you exist, there will be delusion. It's another way of saying that is that to say that the universe has always been there. You go back, the universe was always there. There was no first point in the universe. Or rather, the Buddha doesn't actually say what he says, to be more precise. He says there is no discoverable first point of these things, which actually is a big difference from saying that there is no first point. Why is this so interesting? And the reason why this is so interesting to me, and I think I mentioned this here before, is that the most philosophies, most religions, most kind of ideas, even science in the present day, they all start off with the first cause. The first cause is that either God created the universe, or in science, the first cause is the Big Bang. And it's kind of an interesting saying. I read scientists say this somewhere, that, we can explain everything, Once we're given the Big Bang, we can explain everything afterwards. So all you have to do is give us one miracle, and then we can explain everything else. This was like a scientist saying that, taking kind of the mickey out of his own science, I think. But there's something true about that. They cannot explain the beginning. And then comes the Buddha's teaching here. And the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha actually says that there is no beginning here. If you go back, you always find another cause before the previous cause. And in one way, I find that so much more likely. It seems so much more a reasonable and rational way of looking at the universe, that there always is another first cause before the previous one. There is no first beginning. Or rather, you can't find a first beginning. It always goes back to something else. To me, that is a very sensible approach to reality. And I must personally find that far better explanation of the universe than I can actually find anywhere else. Anyway, that's just a kind of a little bit of a side issue. But the other thing which the Buddha says there, which also is very interesting, he doesn't actually say that there is no first cause. He says there is no discoverable first cause. That is also quite different. And the distinction between those two things is that if you say that there is no first cause, of course, that is something that you can never actually see for yourself. You can never go back infinitely into the past and say that there is no first cause. All you can ever say is that I've gone back as far as I think is possible to go, or I've gone back as far as I can go, within the limits of time or whatever. I haven't found a first cause. There is no discoverable first cause. The Buddha's teachings are basically pragmatic. They're based on what can be observed. They're not based on speculation about reality. And this is another thing that I love about these teachings of the Buddha. They tend to be very pragmatic, based on observable principles rather than speculation. Actually, I would say there is no real speculation in the earliest part of the Buddhist teachings. So, just as a side issue, just to kind of have a look at what it means that there is no beginning with these things. It is problematic. Delusion is self-perpetuating. So what can we do then? And what we can do, the Buddha says, that even though there is no first point of delusion, even though there is no absolute cause for delusion, he says there is still a nutriment for delusion. And a nutriment is something that feeds something else. Yeah, if you give a plant a nutriment, the plant grows. So there is a nutriment to delusion. And the nutriment are those things that make delusion more powerful. Or if you withdraw the nutriment from delusion, they actually take away the power of delusion and decrease it. So delusion can be seen as a kind of this curve, yeah, that goes up and down. Sometimes you're really deluded. Sometimes you're not really deluded at all. So it kind of varies. It varies depending on the nutriment that feeds this. So if you don't want to be deluded, if you want to reduce your delusion in daily life and all these kind of things, what you have to do is to take away the nutriment that feeds our misapprehension of the world, that feeds the delusion of things. So what is this nutriment of delusion? And the answer is the nutriment of delusion are the five hindrances. Yeah, if you've been around the Buddha scene for a while, you will know about the five hindrances. These are the things we talk about all the time in meditation practice. Yeah, sensual desire, ill will, tiredness and lethargy, restlessness and remorse, and lastly, doubt. Yeah, so these defilements of the mind, these are the things that actually make delusion powerful in our lives. So if you are able to reduce the five hindrances, and so much of the path is precisely about reducing the five hindrances, if we can reduce those, then delusion also subsides. Why is it that the hindrances feed delusion? How does this actually work? And it's very easy to understand that. Yeah, when you are angry, do you really know what you're doing when you're angry? Think about a time when you're angry. Very often what happens when you're angry, anger is a very compelling force inside of us. Yeah? Once you are angry, you feel like you have to do something. It's as if you have to act on that anger. But often when you act on the anger, often you feel afterwards a sense of remorse. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, this very powerful compulsive force actually forces you to do things that ultimately you know you shouldn't have done. So while you are under the sway of anger, you are deluded. Because when your mind is clear afterwards, you know it was wrong. So you can see straight away that anger is actually a power of delusion. It's a delusive force that kind of compels us to do things that we actually should know we shouldn't be doing. Yeah, so anger increases delusion. Whenever you feel a bit of ill will, a bit of negativity, be very careful, because that is when you are under the sway of these very compulsive forces that drive us to do things that are very unfortunate often. Desire is very similar. Yeah, when you have very powerful desires, you are whatever it is for food or for whatever it is, very often it's very hard to resist the desire, even though you know you shouldn't be doing something, you do it because the desire is this delusive force that drives, that distorts reality, that tells you you should be doing something. You should do something that you know with your better self you shouldn't really be doing. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. Yeah, when you think about it rationally, it's actually it is so obvious. Of course, the same thing if you are confused, if you are restless, if you have lots of doubt, it's very hard to see things clearly. You are stuck. You know that you actually are deluded to some extent at that particular point. And this is, so these are the forces that drive delusion inside of us, make delusion worse, and make the whole thing kind of not work out properly. So one of the consequences of this, one of the first things for lessons for me from this is to, I always try to remind myself that if I feel a bit of ill will, negativity towards somebody, I always tell myself, now is the wrong time to act, yeah? Don't talk now, don't do anything, because whatever's going to come out of your mouth may very well not be very nice. So I often, when that happens, I try to either withdraw or I try not to communicate so much. Yeah, so if you ever see me angry, tell me, okay, please don't talk now, Ajahn Brahmali, because now is not the right time for you to talk. Yeah. And I think, well, okay, maybe you're right about that. So I kind of withdraw into my room and kind of lie down and kind of take a break and a cup of tea, and I come out when I feel better afterwards. And that is a far better way to react. Yeah, whenever you want to make a decision in life, whenever you want to decide on especially kind of big things, but even minor matters, never make a decision if you have defilements in your mind, because those decisions are always going to end up being stupid. If I'm in a monastery and I'm really fed up with my fellow monks, I'm never fed up with Venerable Sunil because he's such a nice monk. But if I'm ever fed up with my fellow monks in the monastery, then and I say, yeah, now is the time to leave. I had enough of this monastery. I'm going to move to Mars. Yeah, Mars is much better than this Blumen monastery. But it's pretty hard to get to Mars. So you know straight away, you know you're angry because your thoughts are completely unrealistic. But then I remind myself that actually this is not the right time to make a decision about going to Mars or not. Yeah. First of all, you have to allow this kind of the rockets to get as far as Mars before you can make that kind of decision. Now is not the right time. So chill, relax, take it easy. And then when I take it easy, when I go back to my QT, I relax, my mind feels clear again, and I ask myself, should I leave this monastery, yeah, wherever that might be? The answer is always, of course not. Why not? Because if I look at my monastic life in this monastery, I've been living at Bodhinyana Monastery for almost 24 years. Yeah, it's a long time. But when I look at my time in that monastery, all I see is a gradual movement in the right direction, a gradual movement away from negative states of mind towards more positive states of mind. And when I see that, I think I'm actually fulfilling the very purpose of monastic life. Why on earth would I want to go somewhere else? So once your mind is clear, once you know what you're doing, yeah, once you sit back and you relax and you see what's going on, that is the right time to make decisions in your life. Because then you know what you're doing. You're not swayed by the defilements. You can trust your intuition. People often ask, can I make decisions based on intuition, or should it be logical? It doesn't really matter. What matters is that your mind is free of defilements. If your mind is free of defilements, your intuition will be pretty accurate. Your logic will also be pretty accurate. If your mind has defilements, both your logic and your intuition will be swayed by the defilements, so neither of them will actually work. So that is a very good advice just how to make decisions in life. But coming back to these five hindrances, how, if they are so important, yeah, and they are the forces that actually increase delusion in our mind, how can we get rid of the five hindrances? Yeah, and this is what the whole Buddhist path is about. It's all about how to get rid of the five hindrances of the mind. Yeah, and you do that by, first of all, being kind. Yeah, you come to the Buddhist society. I hope it makes you kinder to come to the Buddhist society. I hope it doesn't make you more kind of angry and negative. And I certainly feel, I always feel very happy when I come here. I feel very happy because I know that the people around me are good people. I feel very blessed to be part of a monastery and a community where in general people are really good and wholesome. It's a wonderful thing to be part of that. And please, I hope you can also feel the same thing here. So by doing that, by thinking in this way, by having a sense of kindness for the world around us, by acting in good ways, by avoiding the bad ways, this actually, just by being virtuous, just by being moral, just by being kind, you're already reducing the defilements in your mind. The five hindrances are already going down. Yeah, that's really all we have to do. And then you come here, you do a bit of meditation practice to calm yourself down. Maybe one day you come to our wonderful meditation center called Jhana Grove. Yeah, I think it's one of the best meditation centers in the world. It happens to be right here in Perth. If you don't go there, you're missing out on one of the best meditation centers in the world. So please check it out one of these days and come for a weekend retreat, a 9-day retreat, whatever it is. And then you are applying these teachings in such a way that you are reducing these things that are called the five hindrances. That is what the Buddhist teaching is all about. And as you do that, clarity starts to arise. Delusion is gradually diminishing, and clarity comes in its place. Yeah? And you can feel that happening in your life. It's such a wonderful feeling when that happens. Day by day, year by year, clarity is increasing. That is my experience, and I can guarantee you, if you practice well, it will be your experience as well. And then delusion is going down. One day, when you get into a really deep state of meditation, the defilements will be completely gone. No more five hindrances. And that is when delusion has no nutriment anymore. When delusion has no nutriment, it is very weak. And that is why at that particular point is the point when delusion can be overthrown and true insight is possible. It has no supports anymore. So what you need then is this little thing called a little spark, this paratogosa, the voice of another, which is the word of the Buddha. That little spark, turn your mind in the right direction, and then delusion can be gone once and for all. This is how the causes of delusion, yeah, how these things actually function, how they work together. Yeah. But there is another aspect of this that I also want to mention briefly here. Yeah. And that is the aspect how delusion actually works in our lives, why it is a problem, why it leads to suffering, how it actually functions. I mentioned before that delusion stands at the very basis of dependent origination. Yeah, avijja is the first factor of dependent origination. I'm going to talk a bit about dependent origination. Hope you are ready for that. If you don't understand a word of what I'm saying, I think you will actually. I'm not going to start by saying that because that's kind of being a bit negative. But dependent origination is very interesting teaching of the Buddha and very profound, and it's kind of interesting to get our heads a little bit around what it means. So it starts off with avijja. The second fact, in other words, delusion. Yeah, the second factor of dependent origination is called sankhara in Pali. Sankhara means activities. It means that things we do in life, and specifically it means intentional activities. Yeah, the things that we do, how we live our lives, all the things we do during our daily life. And dependent origination says that from delusion comes activities. Yeah, it may not be very obvious why that is the case. If the Buddha says that, maybe you kind of shrug your shoulders. Maybe, I don't know. So what's going on here? What is the connection between delusion and activities, specifically intentional activities? I find this really fascinating and very interesting myself. I find these little technicalities and things like dependent origination very practical, very useful, and very interesting because it is a core Buddhist way of understanding the world. So the connection here is that, remember, avijja, delusion, when it comes back to the basic thing, three characteristics of existence. Yeah, one of them is the characteristic of suffering. The problem with delusion is that we don't understand that. So we think that things that are suffering in the world, we think that they are actually happiness. And we think that things in the world that actually are happiness, we think that they are suffering. We don't understand where true happiness is to be found. We don't understand the things that are really problematic in the world. And because we don't understand that, what we do, we pursue things that in the end actually are problematic rather than pursuing those things that are real happiness. Yeah, we don't understand true happiness. And I'm sure you will know a little bit about that already. Yeah, sometimes you pursue things, it doesn't really make you all that happy. And that's why you come here to the Buddha Society, hopefully to find something, you know, a little bit more meaningful in life. That's why I'm here, and I hope you're here too, because this is what kind of drives me. To me, this is what gives my life the utmost meaning, the fact that I'm a Buddhist monk. So why? So what happens here is that you think that you know where happiness is. And because you think you know where happiness is, even though it isn't actually the case, you go into the world and you start acting to create that happiness. And that is the intentional activities. Yeah, where do people think that happiness is to be found? People think that happiness is to be found in possessions. Yeah, you've got to have enough possessions, and that's true, of course. But generally speaking, people think that the more possessions you have, the more happy you will be. People think that happiness lies in relationships. People think that happiness lies in status, yeah, social status. People think that happiness lies in promotion in the kind of in your work, whatever that is. Yeah, another kind of status, really. So we think happiness lies in all of these worldly things around us. That is where we assume happiness lies. So because of that, we go out and we try to do those things. We work really hard. We kind of pursue possible partners in life, yeah, either a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a man or woman who would be a suitable partner. We pursue all of these things that we think are going to give us happiness. And that is what these sankharas, intentional activities are all about. In this pursuit of the things of the world, the worldly things, as we do that, sometimes we do good actions, sometimes we do bad actions. Yeah, if we really think that our happiness depends on kind of having the right person as our partner, maybe we will do things to kind of get other, you know, rivals out of the way, which may be bad actions, yeah, because that is where happiness is. Of course, then doing some bad things is okay, because we all want to move towards happiness. And this is how we then end up in the pursuit of worldly things. We end up doing good things, and we also end up doing bad things. Yeah, this is how it happens, because our goal is in the wrong place. Our goal is in securing worldly happiness. So depending on how many of the good things you do, depending on how many of the bad things you do, you will feel accordingly. If you do a lot of bad things because you have no spiritual life, you have no understanding of the importance of morality, you will feel bad about yourself. And because you feel bad about yourself, your consciousness, your mind, your feelings will be dragged down, and you will feel dark and negative and hopeless about yourself inside. Yeah, just think about a time when you have done something bad towards somebody. I'm sure nobody here is absolutely beyond doing anything bad. If you are, I would like to meet you afterwards, so please come up. Because those people are rare, right? Whoa, that would be really cool to meet somebody who's done absolutely nothing bad. But think about it. If you have done something which wasn't quite right, how do you feel about that? And the answer is very obvious. At least to me, I know from my own life, I feel a bit rotten about myself. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That was a bad thing to do. These days, I don't do that many bad things anymore. I hope anyway. That's what it feels like. So usually I don't have all that much remorse about things. But occasionally bad things happen because just the conditioning is so strong. The more of these bad things you do, the more you drag yourself down. You drag down your consciousness, your mind, and you feel negative about yourself. If, on the other hand, you do good things, you do very few bad things, and you are basically a kind, generous, caring person in this world, how do you feel about yourself when you are kind towards others? I don't know. To me, it is very obvious that when I am kind, I feel good about myself afterwards. I feel, yeah, I did something good. I feel kind of, you know, it's not a kind of egotistical thing. It's just an acknowledgement that you know that you're living your life well. And I think it's impossible not to feel reasonably good about, actually it is impossible according to the Buddha, to feel reasonably good about yourself when you live well. Yes, the more of these good things you do, the more you live your life well, the more caring, kind, compassionate you are as a person, and the less of the bad things you do, the more you are brightening up your mind, making your mind joyous, happy and light, creating happiness for yourself. You're lifting up your consciousness. If you do mostly bad things, you're dragging your consciousness down. If you do a mix of both, you're kind of staying roughly even. Yeah? This is the third link of dependent origination. From intentional activities comes consciousness, vijnana. Our mind, our consciousness is affected by what we act, how we live our life. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I would recommend you not to just take this as a matter of faith because the Buddha says so, or because I say so, or whatever. Feel it in your own life. These things actually are experientially possible to ascertain for yourself. So feel it in your own life, the connection between your intentional activities and how you feel about yourself, your consciousness, your mind, and all of these kind of things. It's a very powerful thing that you start to see there. So, what happens then? What happens if we start to have a different outlook in life? If we start to see that actually these sensual pleasures, yes, there is some degree of happiness there, but actually the being kind, being compassionate, there is a far greater happiness to be had from that, because that is a true inner happiness. All these other things are external things that come and go. You can't really rely on them anyway. The inner happiness is something you can rely on. So what happens then is that your delusion is decreasing. You're starting to see things more according to reality. As a consequence, you don't pursue all those worldly aims so much anymore. You start to realize how I live my life is far more important than what I have or what kind of success I have. So because of that, that balance between good and bad acts changes. Yeah, you do more of the good stuff, you do less of the bad stuff. And as a consequence, you're brightening up your mind, making your life more meaningful and worthwhile, and basically making your life, and also the life of people around you, far better as a consequence. Delusion is going down. happiness is going up. And sure, you can start to see the mechanism here. But one of the most interesting things about this is one of the things that you start to realize when you come here to Dhammaloka Center, you do a bit of meditation on Friday night or on Saturday or whenever it is, and you start to feel peaceful. What does it feel like when there's less activity going on in your mind? What does it feel like to be more peaceful? And in my experience, it feels really good. I was going to say some other word, but it feels really good. It feels so nice to be peaceful. It feels so nice when the mind starts to calm down. It feels so nice when the activities get less. So what you are seeing there is that the second factor of dependent origination, which are the intentional activities, actually, it's suffering. The less you have of those activities, when you sit down, you close your eyes, you watch the breath, you just feel so, whoa, this is so nice to sit here and just relax on Friday night. The more you see that, the more you understand that the very second factor of dependent origination, all these intentional activities that we have, actually, that is a problem. That itself, all the activities, is a problem. So once you see that, you realize that actually allow all of those activities to fade away in meditation. The deeper the meditation is, the less activities there are, the happier you are as a consequence. And now you can start to see another aspect of dependent origination, whereby the second factor, you allow it gradually to die out. And the more it dies out, the less the whole sequence of dependent origination which comes after that, that too starts to die out as a consequence. Until eventually you come to a point where you stop doing any activities at all. Through insight, through your meditation practice, you come to that point. This is called, are you ready for this? This is called Sabba Sankara Samatha. Okay, you don't have to remember that. That's okay. Sabba means the calming down of all intentional activities. That's what it means. And that is the goal of the Buddhist path. That is Nibbana itself. That is awakening itself. Delusion has completely gone. You understand where real happiness is to be found. You pursue that by action, not by pursuing it at all, by allowing everything to die down. And eventually you find that deeper sense of happiness through your meditation practice. So this is how this happens, through a misunderstanding of where happiness is to be found. We pursue those things not worthy of pursuit, and we don't pursue those things that actually are worthy of being pursued. This is one way of looking at this. There are many other ways. Another nice way of looking at this, I apologize if this is getting a bit kind of heavy, but this is just the way I talk sometimes, but I really apologize. But so another way of looking at this is, remember I said the three characteristics. One characteristic is the characteristic of non-self. But of course, the reality is that we have a sense of self. So the reality is non-self, but we have a sense of self. There is a clash, again, between reality and how we actually look at things. What that means, because we have a sense of self, it means that we have a sense of agency. We have a feeling that we can actually influence outcomes in the world. Not only can we influence outcomes, but we actually identify with the agent. People, when you go into the world, you act, you feel alive precisely because you are acting. You are the agent in the world, and this is your sense of identity. We all have a little bit of that, I'm sure. I'm sure you can relate to what I'm talking about, being the agent, now I'm getting things done, and you feel alive because of that. To be is to do. And to do is to be. Once you do, to do is to be. Once you do, you feel that you exist as a consequence. So because of this, because we feel that we have capacity, we have the agency in the world, that encourages us to go out and try to create happiness for ourselves. But actually, the world is far less amenable to control than we think it is. The world often goes against our wishes. That is why relationships break up. That is why we have these terrible bushfires here in Western Australia and burn down our whole village. That's why death comes when you least want it. That is why all of these problems in the world happen all the time, because it is actually not within our control. So again, you can see two different things here. You start pursuing things because you feel like the agent, because you have agency, when in fact, actually that is in large part a delusion. So once you understand the idea of non-self, once you overturn the basic delusion at the base of dependent origination, a lot of that is taken away. You no longer identify with being the doer. Because you no longer identify with being the doer, you don't enjoy the act of doing anymore. Because you don't enjoy the act of doing, and because you know you can't create happiness that way anyway, again, you stop the intentional activities. Yeah, the intentional activities die down. And because the intentional activities die down, again, the whole sequence of dependent origination, which leads to suffering, all that dies down too. And as a consequence, you experience more and more happiness. This is the outcome of this whole thing here. So, my point here is simply to make the point that as long as we have delusion in our life, as long as we look for happiness in the wrong place, as long as we think that we are agents who have power to actually change the world, and also we identify with that agency, we are bound to make mistakes. And we are, in our own life, right here, right now, perpetuating suffering in our own life, and also suffering down the line in future lives at the same time. So that is a very brief idea of how dependent origination, the first three factors, very briefly explained how they work on the path. Just to kind of bring that in, I think it's very fascinating. I like to bring in some of the deeper aspects of Buddhism, even on these Friday night talks. Yeah, I think it's actually very useful to understand some of these aspects, because when you understand these things, it actually leads, I think, to greater confidence in these very powerful teachings of the Buddha. So, just to summarize very briefly what this talk is all about. It is about delusion being the main problem in life. This is what we're trying to overcome. If you want to overcome delusion, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddhist practice, is the way to overcome that. What is the Buddhist practice? One way of summarizing the Buddhist practice, you can summarize it in one word, and that is kindness. Be kind, live well, and as you do that, delusion declines. Until one day, yeah, you take your little claws, you take your little beak, the little claws in the beak, this is kind of a metaphor for the lack of the hindrances. It's a kind of strange metaphor, but anyway, that's what it's a metaphor for. You kind of claw, get out of the egg, yeah, you make a little hole in the egg, rip open the eggshell, and wow, now you see the world for what it actually is for the first time. And that is what you have waiting for you down the line if you keep on practicing this path. Okay, that is all for tonight. Okay, so now is your chance to ask questions. If you are confused, that's okay. That's perfectly acceptable. If you're not confused, that's also okay. So if you have any comments or questions, this is the right time. Everybody, thank you very much. No comments? Whoa, okay. Oh, over here. There's a comment over here, yeah.
So, when you said that activities, ceasing activities, means that we'll suffer less, is that to do with the idea that just being calmer and not pursuing these things are going to... So, yeah, I'm just confused about the whole activities thing. Does that mean we should try and be more, like, less reactive and just not do as much and be, like, just have a simpler existence?
That's one way of thinking about that. But what I was really referring to was more like meditation experiences. And when you get into a deep state of meditation, what happens? The mind gets completely unified. There's no movement in the mind anymore. There's no activity going on. And you realize for the first time in your life that actually no activity is just so amazingly fantastic. It feels, you know, the highest bliss you can possibly have is when the mind becomes absolutely still. So that's what I meant by that. But you're right, you can also bring it into your ordinary life. And one of the ways of doing that, as you say, is try to flow through life rather than react to things all the time. Try to go with the flow, yeah, rather than trying to kind of... always control things and trying to kind of make things. The more you try to control things in life, the more problems you're going to have. The more you're able to go with the flow, it means that you realize that the world is always like this, yeah? And the more you're able to go with the kind of changeability of the world, the less resistance there is inside of you, the easier time you're going to have. So you're right about that as well, yeah? Yeah. Okay, anyone else? Everyone else happy? Yeah? Great, okay. Last chance? Okay. Okay, didn't take it, sorry. That's so, a couple of questions from overseas. First one is from Wolfram in Germany. Can I say that delusion is all that disturbs the peace? How can I be sure that my insight is also not delusion? Do I feel the difference between delusion and insight? Okay, very good questions. Does delusion disturb the peace? Yes, it disturbs the peace. Because delusion, right, is the craving, it is the ill will, and of course ill will and craving by the very nature disturb the peace. Craving is precisely about not being content in the present moment, thinking about the future. Ill will is about thinking about things that may have happened in the past. So indeed, that certainly disturbs the peace. But even when you become very peaceful, even if you go into a state of full samadhi, yeah, full meditation, there is still an underlying delusion left at that particular point. And that is the delusion that you can overthrow through insight. So you make your mind peaceful as far as you possibly can, then insight becomes possible from that, and then the delusion will be completely gone. And that's why once you become fully awakened, you have a very high degree of peace as a consequence. How can I be sure that my insight is not delusion? Well, delusion comes, as I was trying to say, in a large number of degrees. Yeah, you have the most kind of really powerful delusion of very strong anger or very strong ill will or being very confused or whatever, or being in darkness and all these kind of things. Very strong delusion. But then you gain a little bit of insight. And maybe your insight is that, okay, this anger is no good, let me try to have less anger. Or you have some kind of small insight in your daily life about where you seek your happiness or whatever it is. That is less delusion than the previous delusion. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you are entirely free of delusion, but it means that you have less delusion than you had before. Yeah? In this way, you gradually reduce your delusion until one day you are completely free of it. But to actually know whether you are completely free of delusion, that is the hard one. And many people will tend to overestimate themselves. Yeah, they think, yeah, well, I'm an arahant. Yeah, you go on the internet and you see kind of these people who claim to be fully enlightened. Yeah, my name is John, I'm arahant, yeah, kind of on the website. And straight away you think, well, maybe not, yeah, there's something slightly fishy about this. So sometimes people overestimate themselves. The hard part is actually to know at what point you are entirely free of delusion. And one of the ways of knowing that is that you know that actually you have ended rebirth. Yeah, you actually know that as a fact, that you've ended rebirth. You may wonder how that is possible, but that is actually one of the consequences of being a fully awakened being. Yeah. Do I feel the difference between delusion and insight? Yes, you feel very easy to feel the difference. If you have a real insight, insight has consequences. One of the main consequences of insight is that you feel at peace. Why? Because insight is precisely insight into the three characteristics of suffering. Yeah, if you understand, if you have an insight into suffering, it means you let go of that. When you let go of something, you feel more peaceful as a consequence. If you have an insight that, you know, this particular pursuit, trying to kind of climb the corporate ladder or whatever, suddenly you get, one day you're like, this is crazy, what am I doing this for? Suddenly you will feel more peaceful as a consequence, because some of that craving and attachment will die down. So that's how you recognize insight. Always comes with a sense of peace. Always comes with a sense of calm. Delusion is not always restless, but at the very least, it is a bit confused and a little bit problematic in other ways. Okay, this is from Anjeev in India. Hello, Anjeev. What do you advise to someone who understands delusion in theory, but is still addicted to sensual pleasures? Okay, so theory is a good start, yeah? So be happy that you got the theory right. So you should feel really happy with yourself and kind of give yourself a pat on the back. I got the theory right. Continue reading the suttas of the Buddha as you do that, that addiction, everyone is addicted to sensual pleasures to some extent, except if you have gone a long, long, long way on the Buddhist path. Yeah? So first of all, don't worry too much about it. But as you start, the more you read the suttas of the Buddha, the more you understand what he was talking about, the more clear it will be to you why this is problematic. And gradually, as you practice the Buddhist path, as you practice kindness, it's possible to indulge in sensual pleasures and be kind at the same time, yeah? As you practice kindness, your source of happiness comes from somewhere else. It comes from the inner contentment, the inner happiness. As your source of happiness comes from somewhere else, your addiction to sensual pleasures will decline. If you get into a really deep state of meditation, sensual pleasures will be completely gone because you're getting your happiness somewhere completely different. But in the meantime, read the word of the Buddha. Try to understand the dangers that he talked about in sensual pleasures. I believe I have talked about the danger of sensual pleasures here before. I can't remember what I talked about anymore now. But I think I have, and maybe I will give another talk about that in the future. It's very interesting, actually, what the Buddha has to say about these things. So maybe I will do that, Anjiv, and maybe stay tuned in one of these days and get another talk on the danger of sensual pleasures. In the meantime, good luck. Remember, come back to the word of the Buddha again and again and again. And as you do that, your view, your delusion gradually gets straightened out, and then you are in business, as they say here. Okay, very good, everyone. So let's just pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Namaste. Sipasipanno.